The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and today I'm joined just by Nathan Glidable. Brett Oldenburg will probably be back with us next week. All right, jumping into AAA today, our first story is the Memphis Grizzlies have suspended point guard John Morant from all team activities after a video showing him holding a gun began circulating on social media this past weekend. The suspension and its length are pending a league review. All of this comes after the NBA suspended Morant for a similar incident 2 months ago. So Nathan, what are your thoughts on this John Morant ordeal, and do you think he's going to be suspended all season next year?
First off, what an idiot. I mean, you already went through this once. They've had team meetings about him. Everyone on the Grizzlies team is fed up with his off the court shenanigans, and the season's over and he goes and does it again. I think at this point it should be a year length suspension. I mean, he's not going to learn. He didn't learn the first time from the, month he was suspended. So if he's not going to learn from that, he needs to go ahead and be suspended for the year, and maybe then he'll get it. But it's just unacceptable for him to have this type of, behavior as an NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, it's just idiotic what he did. They told you the last time you needed to stop this behavior. He said he even said he was irresponsible and all that. He said he learned what he did was wrong. And then he turns around 2 months later and does it again. It's just idiotic, childish behavior. He is over 20 years old. I know he's still young, but that makes no excuse. He should know better at this point in his life. He's idol for all these kids nowadays, and he just needs to realize that, because kids seeing him with a gun is not great. These young kids are really gullible nowadays. I mean, they're going to be like, oh, John Morant has a gun. Maybe that's good for me. And it's just going to cause a lot of big issues. He just needs to realize that he's looked up to by all these kids, and waving a gun around on social media is not the thing you need to be doing. And I agree. I think he should be suspended all of next season. I think he should lose all his endorsement deals, all that. I mean, the first time, the suspension was good. But if you do it again after you said, you learned your lesson, there's obviously something wrong there. He needs to be punished severely for this. And Michael Wilbon went on ESPN, I believe, after it happened, and said he's not going to endorse John Morant anymore. He's not going to let his son buy his shoes that are coming out. He's not going to let anything of John Morant in that house. Would that be something you would do, Nathan, if you were in Michael Wilbon's shoes?
Yeah, I mean, it might seem harsh, but I think that's the direct path. Really, my whole question is, how many more times does this have to happen before Adam Sandler finally says John Morant can't play in the NBA anymore? I mean, obviously, with him being a big name player, with him being a star, he gets a little bit more, he's able to get away with more of this than, the average NBA role player. But honestly, he keeps doing this stuff, he needs to be banned from the league.
Yep. Well, time will tell what happens with John Morant and this whole incident. Moving on to the second story, Burger King is now offering a new Whopper burger and sundae in partnership with the new Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse movie, which hits theaters June 2nd. The Whopper will feature a red bun with black sesame seeds, along with melted Swiss cheese and all the usual Whopper toppings. The sundae will consist of soft-serve ice cream topped with black and red popping candy, and these items will be available nationwide from May 15th through June 21st. Nathan, I know you're a huge Burger King fan. So what are your thoughts on this whole partnership they're doing with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse?
Well, it wouldn't just be Alex's antidotes without a Burger King story. This is first thing I, wanted to talk about. I hate Burger King. I hate eating Burger King. It is absolutely disgusting. I get doing partnerships. Spider-Man is probably one of the biggest partnerships you can do doing things with Marvel and Disney and all of that, but you don't have to make your food even more disgusting. It's already disgusting enough. I'm sorry. It just for some kids, it might be, viable for them to order. But I'm just like really wondering who besides these little kids is going to get this. And, I always come to the question, it's no one.
I think this Burger King marketing team is doing a great job, and we saw with their commercials, all those pretty good commercials are probably the best thing we've seen in about 5 or 6 years, marketing wise on the commercial end. And I mean, this is another great thing. It's just the fact their food sucks. It's never going to be good. They're always going to be McDonald's little brother. I mean, I like what Burger King marketing team is doing, but it's just your food sucks. Moving on to the third story, the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame class of 2023 was inducted this past weekend. The class included Karen Mason Banson, Carlos Dansby, Roman Harper, Larry Keenan, Theo Ratliff, Jack Sherrill, Gerald Wallace, and Roddy White. What are your thoughts on all these guys being inducted, Nathan?
Well, you know, I just, you know, go down the list and, you know, a bunch of huge names. Of course, I think one of my favorite guys being Gerald Wallace, you know, just watching him in the NBA, obviously what he was able to do. Another guy, Roman Harper. I could talk countless, you know, hours about him, you know, playing for the Saints and stuff. But, you know, it's a huge honor to be inducted into the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame. And they have a great list of guys here.
Yeah, I think they did a great job this season. Everybody here, I think, deserved it well. Like you mentioned, Nathan, Roman Harper and guy like Gerald Wallace. Loved to watch those guys back in the day. And then you had Roddy White from UAB. I think this is long overdue. He's the best receiver in Falcons history. I know Julio Jones played there, but, you know, there was a little stuff at the end that kind of soured me on Julio Jones with the Falcons. But Roddy White was the best receiver they ever had, the best receiver player I think UAB's ever had in their time. I mean, I think all these men and women deserve getting inducted this year. All right, Nathan, what do we got for week five of USFL?
Yeah, another great week of USFL football. I would say it's probably similar to how week three went. Very weird, in my opinion. Let's go ahead and jump right into you know, the award winners of the week, starting with offensive player of the week being Pittsburgh Maulers quarterback Torrey Williams. Wow, that's weird to say. Pittsburgh Maulers QB. But he went 15 of 19, 184 passing yards, 59 rushing yards, and 3 touchdowns total. Our defensive player of the week being defensive end Breland Speaks off the Michigan Panthers, who had 6 tackles and 3 sacks. And the special teams player of the week, none other than kicker Luis Aguilar, who was 8 for 8 on field goals with a long of 56 yards. And he scored all 24 points, including the game winner, and tied the all-time pro football record for most points scored in a game. You know, that's just crazy to see right there. I didn't think that was going to be happening this weekend. And I think the biggest thing to talk about now is that everyone in the North Division has a losing record, and they are all 2-3. So the North is not looking so good. But let's go ahead and jump right into the first game of the weekend, that being the Pittsburgh Maulers versus the Michigan Panthers, where the Maulers ended up winning 23-7. The Maulers ended up outgaining the Panthers 299 yards to 152. You know, at the beginning of the season, just watching how poorly this Pittsburgh Maulers offense performed to where they are now, it's just, you know, a complete flip. If you told me that the Maulers would have been in this situation at the beginning of the season, I would have laughed at you. I'll laugh at myself at the stuff I said. but the Michigan Panthers have fallen off a cliff. They have not been able to get anything done in the offensive end. It continues to be a huge problem. And, you know, to speak on that, you know, it's just a quarterback issue. We talked about it last week where Carson Strong and Josh Love did not look great at all. And we kept wondering who is going to be the starting quarterback. And, you know, we both came to the conclusion that it's not going to matter who's the starting quarterback because they're both going to do a crappy job. And they did that. Carson Strong, 13-23, 94 yards, no touchdowns, 3 interception. He had 3 carries for 10 yards on the ground. Josh Love, he came in. He was 8-12, 68 yards, a touchdown, and he also had an interception. So that's one of the biggest things for this Panthers offense. They do not have a solid quarterback. And then we touched on their running game a little bit. The running game has been non-existent since the week they played the Stars. Reggie Corbin, 9 carries for 11 yards. You know, Stevie Scott, III, he had 5 carries, -6 yards. It's a pitiful effort from this Panthers offense. Their defense can only do so much in a game. You talk about a guy in Breland Speaks who really, he kind of disappeared over the past few weeks. But now he's back to playing the type of football we expect him to play and lead that Panthers defense. Yeah, they can only do so much. And that's kind of weird to say since they were playing the Maulers. Alex, what have you seen from this Maulers offense from the point where they first started the season to now to prove that they might be a playoff team?
Yeah, their quarterbacks figured out how to play the position. Troy Williams at the beginning of the season, him and James Morgan looked like they were lost. Need to get him a map. But now it's like the past 2 or 3 weeks, Troy Williams has figured out how good he is. He's comfortable in the offense now. We saw it this week, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns, only 1 interception. He only missed 4 passes. He had 10 carries, 59 yards, and a touchdown as well. The team's leading rusher. So, I mean, it's just the quarterback figuring it out, the offensive coordinator putting in the position to be successful. But the one thing I worry about with this team is, once again, their inability to have a running back that can run the ball effectively. You had the running back, Groshek, only have average 2 yards per carry on 11 carries. And then you had Madre London at four carries, 15 yards. So that's what might be an issue in the future if teams really force Troy Williams to beat him through the air and take away his ability to run. It's going to be a real struggle for them to even get some rushing yards, especially with all these running backs struggling. But their defense, we've mentioned it week and again, is probably the best in the league. They have 4 sacks and 10 tackles for loss. I don't think I've ever seen a team in the USFL get 10 tackles for loss. They had 7 passes defended. This defense is just playing lights out. Mark Gilbert, their corner, had 5 passes defended along with an interception. I mean, that was amazing to me. This Maulers team was just turning it on at the right time. And it's just great to see, considering how much we were ragging on them at the beginning of the year. But then on the flip side, looking at the Michigan Panthers, they're like turning into the Maulers we saw at the beginning of the season. They had 2.6 yards per play on offense, 4 turnovers, 2 interceptions, 2 fumbles lost. Their quarterbacks look lost, like Troy Williams and James Morgan did at the beginning of the season for the Maulers. And their running game is atrocious. Both the running backs combined for 14 carries and a net of 5 yards. You're not going to win a football game at any level with 5 rushing yards from your running backs. Yeah, it's just impossible to do that unless your quarterback is Patrick Mahomes and throws for over 600 yards in a game. I mean, this Panthers team, their defense played good, but you can't win a game with 5 rushing yards from your running backs and scoring 7 points. And that's just tough for the Panthers. I really thought they were going to be much better than this.
Yeah, I thought we all thought, especially after week one, how they looked. But honestly, they're not that team anymore. And the Maulers pick up the win. Moving on to the second game, the Houston Gamblers took on the Birmingham Stallions. The Gamblers ended up winning 27-20. The Stallions ended up outgaining the Gamblers, however, 321 yards to 262. To me, at least, start off with this game, we know how beat up the Stallions' whole entire team is. Their defense is very, very depleted. Talk about missing a guy in Scooby Wright, missing a guy in Bo Schwaro, who was undoubtedly one of the most effective running backs last season. But, you know, it all rested on the shoulders of Alex Magoo. And he did his job of delivering. He was 24-37, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, and he had 6 carries for 76 yards and was the team's leading rusher. You know, immediately, this defense for the Stallions, they did a little better this week. I thought that Mark Thompson was going to have a much better game than he did. Not saying he did have a bad game, speaking that he did add 16 carries for 78 yards and 3 touchdowns. But for the most part, they did an incredible job defending the pass. Maybe that's because the Gamblers did not have their starting quarterback, Kendrick Behar. Terry Wilson ended up filling in for him. He was 9-14, 117 yards and a touchdown through the air, as well as 6 carries for 41 yards on the ground. But I thought that the Gamblers really didn't perform to the standard they had last week. I thought the Stallions defense played much better. However, I go back to the Stallions offensive line. We challenged them, and we said that was going to be the key factor in this game, Alex. Yep. And they improved a little bit from last week, but they did not improve enough. You talked about how many times Alex McGee was running for his life. There were several hits on him where I thought he was going to be sent to the hospital because the offensive line cannot block anyone. It is just pitiful effort at this point. Alex, what have you seen from the Stallions offense? And not only their offensive line, but I think that it's now to the point that their playmakers struggle to get open, or sometimes they just drop the ball.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Magoo, just like Case Cookus for the Stars, has absolutely no help. The offensive line is atrocious. I mean, there was multiple times Alex Magoo was running, and he had to put his body on the line to get these extra yards because I think he knew the offensive line was not going to block for a short yard situation. And I really feel bad for him because he plays amazing. And, you know, when people see a team losing, it always comes back on the quarterback not playing well, or it's the quarterback's fault. And this is an instance where it's not the quarterback's fault. I mean, this dude is playing great. It's just the fact his running backs are struggling. I mean, you had C.J. Marable only had to get 43 yards on the ground. You had Zaquandre Wright have -3 rushing yards. I mean, they got to get more. Somebody's got to have over 50 rushing yards to help him out or something. Jay Sternberger did not have a great of a game. He had 4 receptions, 41 yards. And then really Alex Magoo's go-to guy these past couple of weeks, Davion Davis, only had 2 receptions with 22 yards. So, I mean, it was a real struggle for him to get playmakers open. And when he did, there was multiple times they just dropped passes. There was one time Austin Watkins had a first down, and he just ran. It looks like he was not even looking for the pass. And it went right past him. I mean, this offense just looks like they're not on the same page anymore. It's not a machine like we saw last year with Jamar Smith and Alex Magoo and Bo Scarborough and all those guys. They really got to get this offense on track. The defense, I think Lorenzo Burns might be baking the Burger King Spider-Man burger here in a few weeks. I mean, the dude single-handedly sold the game. He had like 3 pass interference penalties on just stupidity. I mean, he knows better. They only have 1 sack, 1 TFL. The defense, it looks lost. They don't have the same pressure they put on quarterbacks anymore. I don't know what's going on with the Stallions team. They're not great. If they were in the North, I would say they have a better chance of making the playoffs. But the way they played this week, against a backup quarterback for that matter, it doesn't inspire me whatsoever. But then looking at the Gamblers, I mean, they played their backup quarterback. I did not expect them to win this game whatsoever with Terry Wilson, especially the way he started out the game. Him and Cozart, who came in a little bit in the second quarter, looked like they were struggling. But in the second half, Terry Wilson really turned it on. I mean, there was a pass he threw to Anthony Ratliff Williams for 50 yards. It was an absolute dot. I mean, it was beautiful. That he really shows the ability to just throw the deep pass very well. But I still think, even though I said at the beginning of the year he didn't deserve it to be, Kenji Bahar is the starting quarterback for the Gamblers here for the foreseeable future. I hope he gets well and comes back next week. But then Mark Thompson, like you mentioned, Nathan, he didn't have the over 100 rushing yards we're accustomed to with him, but the 3 touchdowns he had on the ground were the difference maker. I mean, the Stallions defense could not stop him whatsoever. And the fact the Gamblers did not get penalized the entire game, people were pretty angry about that. There were a few questionable calls. There was one on the final drive, or the second to final drive of the game for the Stallions, where there was an obvious missed pass interference call. I get that. And yes, it was missed, but officials make mistakes. And I know it's at the end of the game, but I mean, you can't do nothing about it. And the Stallions penalties they got were deserved. I mean, there was, like I mentioned, Lorenzo Burns being stupid. It was one of them. But the refs did not cost the Stallions this game. The Stallions cost themselves the game with all of the inability to just play defense against a backup quarterback and not commit pass interference.
Wow, I don't think I could have summed it up better myself. You know, and it was in all likelihood that game might have decided who got that last playoff spot in the South. I still think the Breakers are in a good spot. We'll talk about them in a minute. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the third game of the week, being the New Jersey Generals taking on the Philadelphia Stars, where the Stars ended up finally getting another win, 24-21. You know, we talked about Case Cookus a lot and how much help he doesn't have. I think that this is still true for the most part. I still don't think he has a lot of help, but you know, the only help he did have this game was his kicker. Luis Aguilar was 8 for 8 on field goals. I can't even put it into words how pitiful this Stars offense is, because they were 0-4 on red zone touchdowns. They only had 2.9 yards per play. It just seems like they just completely struggle on offense. But, you know, thank God they have a good field goal kicker, because every time they got in general territory, they were able to kick a field goal. You know, the immediate thing that jumps off the page to me, the Generals outgained the Stars 354 yards to 166 yards. This Stars team had 166 yards, and they won the game. You know, this all goes back to the Generals turning the ball over. They had 4 turnovers in this game, 3 fumbles lost, and an interception. That is just unacceptable. They went back to the 2 quarterbacks just in this game, which, you know, I really didn't get it. I thought it was really, really stupid. DeAndre Johnson was 7-12, 79 passing yards. And he had 7 carries, 62 yards on the ground, and 1 touchdown. He was also the team's leading rusher. So I'm really wondering, why Darius Victor sucks this bad, because he ended up having 12 carries, 49 yards, and he had the 3 fumbles lost. Someone get this dude on the bench. He does not need to be touching the football again. He obviously, sprayed his hands with some type of spray form butter, or like he was spraying a cookie sheet. I don't know what he's doing. And we talked about a few weeks ago, he had a fumble. I didn't think that he had a fumble problem. But this week, I'm really wondering if he does or not. Yeah, he is the entire reason that they didn't win this game. I am sorry. Outside of the quarterback play, I think that was horrible too. But he was the whole reason they lost this game.
Yeah, I mean, this was the ugliest game I think I've watched all season. The turnovers by the Generals, the inability of the Stars to punch it in the red zone for a touchdown. I mean, it was atrocious. Like you mentioned, Nathan, the quarterback play for each team was not great. None of the 3 quarterbacks that played passed for over 150 yards. But Darius Victor fumbling 3 times. I think somebody needs to give him some stick'em so he doesn't fumble anymore. Because good Lord, this dude, 4 fumbles in the last 2 weeks. Not good at all. The Generals team, like I mentioned the last 2 weeks, they were really relying on these chunk plays to get these touchdowns. Didn't have it this game, but really. It was just a struggle to get the ball down the field and punch it in the end zone. This Generals team, I don't know what to think. If they were in the South, this team probably would be 1-4, something like that, because they are not very good. But they're in the North, so they get the 2-4 record, or 2-3, I guess. Yeah, 2-3. But then you got the Stars. Case Cookus, we said last week, he needed to get some help. And like Nathan mentioned, he got the help from his kicker. So at least he got some help. But I want to give a big shout out to Matt Colburn for actually carrying the ball for over 20 yards on the ground this game. Because good Lord, this dude cannot play the running back position at all. He's awful. Their offensive line still sucks. The Stars just really got bailed out by the fact Darius Victor can't hold on to the football. Neither of these teams are going to win the USFL championship this season the way they're playing right now. They both got to figure it out. This is just an ugly, ugly game.
Yeah, I don't even want to speak on it anymore. Let's go ahead and move on to our last game of the week, which I think was the most baffling game, in my opinion. The Memphis Showboats beat the New Orleans Breakers 17-10, knocking them from the unbeaten ranks. No more undefeated teams in the league. I think the immediate thing that jumps off the page here, the Showboats dominated the time of possession, 33 minutes to the Breakers 26. Alex, did you expect this result, first of all? I mean, we talked about this game for a while, and we didn't think that there was any chance that the Showboats won this game, and yet here we are on Monday talking about it.
Yeah, give me the old Bozo hat, Bozo alert, because I said it was going to be like 42-0, and Lord, I was wrong.
I know, I was right there with you. I don't even remember what I said, but I thought there was no chance that the Showboats won this game the way the Breakers have been playing. We continue to talk about how the Breakers have like no flaws in their entire team. Well, it really showed this game, because they had 3 turnovers, 2 fumbles lost, and an interception. And it was all McLeod, Bethel Thompson, who was doing the, just friendly fire. He threw the interception, 2 fumbles lost. West Hills was not the same in this game. He ended up having more receiving yards than rushing yards. He had 14 carries for just 38 yards. That is disgusting. That makes me want to throw up right there. But he did have the 7 receptions for 46 yards. The Breakers team just did not look the same. I really think it came down to just momentum not being there because you had the turnovers. And it is speak on the Showboats too, because they didn't play a perfect game either. They had 2 turns of their own. I did not expect this at all. I am so confused on how we got to this point. I'm so confused on the fact that the Breakers just looked absolutely terrible in this game after, again, 4 weeks of just dominance. Alex, what did you see?
Once again, a team gets bailed out by their kicker. The Showboats MVP this season has been their kicker, Alex Kessman. He once again was 3-for-3 on field goals and hit a long of 50 yards. So, I mean, he's really their MVP this week, kept them in the game, got them to win. Cole Kelly continues to be just a game manager. He had played better this week, 224 yards, a touchdown and an interception. But once again, their running game continues to struggle. Kareth White, 14 carries, 29 yards. I mean, it's just the fact that they got bailed out by the fact the Breakers turned the ball over three times, which is very uncharacteristic of that offense, and the fact that their kicker is very reliable. So good for the Showboats. I'm glad they got another win against the Breakers team. I guess whoever plays Breakers next needs to go watch the Showboats film on how to play defense against that offense. But then looking at the Breakers, I think we both knew that it was going to happen at some point. This team was going to lose. We saw last year with the Stallions, they lost at least one game. Good for them to lose earlier in the season, about the halfway point, so they can figure out how teams are defending them and just address that issue. But Bethel Thompson, the fact he had the interception and two fumbles was a big issue. He's got to get that cleaned up if they're going to continue their hot streak and just treat this as a speed bump on their way to the championship. Wes Hills, looks like teams kind of figured him out. We've seen the last 2 weeks, he hasn't been able to carry the ball for over 100 yards. But he has shown the ability to do well in the passing game. So, I mean, he's very versatile in that. But they got to get Wes Hills going on the ground once again if they're gonna win more football games. But the Showboats offense really shut down Sage Surratt. Held him under 50 receiving yards on six receptions. So, I mean, that's good as well. But just the Breakers' uncharacteristic turnovers were the downfall of this team this week.
I thought the Breakers were going to lose at some point in the season. But you know, to think it was going to come against the Showboats, I couldn't have predicted that in a million years.
No, definitely not.
All right, Alex. So the schedules were released for all these NFL teams. What do you have for us for the NFL?
Yeah, so like you just mentioned, Nathan, they did release all 32 team schedules last week. The easiest schedules using projected win totals from Vegas odd makers. The first easiest would be the New Orleans Saints, Nathan, your favorite team. Two, the Atlanta Falcons. Three, the Carolina Panthers. Four, the Indianapolis Colts. And then five, the Chicago Bears. So, Nathan, I'll ask you about the Saints. You see what they have on their schedule. Is it feasible for them to make the playoffs this season in such a weak division? And do you see them, if they don't, do you see them at least winning over 8 or 9 games?
You know, I don't get you know, I don't think there's any way we make the playoffs. I've continued to be disappointed and let down every single year I've watched the Saints team. What am I to think that this year's going to be any different? I don't care that we had the easiest schedule in the NFL. I look at some of these games and I'm just like, well, that's a loss right there. We're going to find some way to screw this up. Yep. Someone's going to get injured and not play and we're not going to have any help. So I'm going to go ahead and predict that. I don't think that we're going to make the playoffs. I don't really think we're going to get to 8 or 9 wins. I think we'll be lucky if we do. And yeah, that's just what I'm going to sit on for now. I'm just going to say that we're not going to do very good.
Yeah. Looking at my Carolina Panthers, I mean, it's really good for Bryce Young to play his first season with one of the top three easiest schedules in the league. I mean, they got the Saints, the Falcons and the Buccaneers all twice, all teams, not very good. Then they got the Seahawks, the Vikings, the Lions. Those are going to be pretty tough opponents there. The Dolphins probably be, depending on if he was healthy when they play him or not, probably be tough. Then the matchup I'm looking most forward to is the Texans-Panthers game. Dummy C.J. Stroud versus Bryce Young. I can't wait to see who wins that game. And then they got the Colts, the Bears. Probably, hopefully, 2 wins there, I hope. I mean, I'm really expecting this team to at least win 8 games this season. I'm hoping they make the playoffs. Don't think it's going to happen. I hope it does. But with a rookie quarterback and a new first-year head coach, I know he coached for the Colts last season. But I think it's going to be a year before they do make the playoffs. But I think getting them the easiest schedule of the season is a good thing for Bryce Young and a young Panthers team. Do any of the other three teams, Nathan, stick out to you as maybe playoff hopefuls or, you know, doing better than they did last season for the most part?
Playoff hopefuls. I don't see a team that's a playoff hopeful here. I think I could pick apart all of these teams and tell you how bad they're going to do. I think it's easy to say that the Atlanta Falcons will do better than last year, seeing that last year was absolutely horrid for them. and they do have the second easiest schedule. It's all about how, you know, each team plays every single week. It's kind of hard to say a team will be this good in preseason just because of the roster they have. because you don't know what some people are capable of. You know, sometimes you have those people that fly under the radar that make these big plays in these games. So it's really impossible to say that, you know, one of these teams is just going to do absolutely better or they have an easy schedule. But at this point, I think anyone who could do better, I think it's the Falcons.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think the Falcons would be the most likely team to do better. I think it's kind of interesting that all five of these teams, outside of the Saints, who have Derek Carr and his $150 million contract.
Just a reminder, Alex.
have very, very young quarterbacks. Got the Falcons with Ritter, Panthers with Bryce Young, Colts with Anthony Richardson, then Bears with Justin Fields. So, I mean, these young quarterbacks are really hopefully going to get the ability to test these, I guess, weaker teams in the NFL and see how well they play. But I guess we'll see who of these five teams is able to take advantage of these easy schedules. Moving on to the hardest schedules using the projected win totals from Vegas oddmakers. The most difficult is the New England Patriots. The second most, Buffalo Bills. The third, Kansas City Chiefs. Fourth, Las Vegas Raiders. And then the fifth, Miami Dolphins. So looking at those, Nathan, do you think any of these teams might finish probably top five worst teams in the league? And then what do you think about, you know, the Bills and the Chiefs having some of the most or the most toughest schedules in the league?
Yeah, immediately I think that the Raiders could be pretty bad. Speaking of that, yeah, they had Jimmy Garoppolo as their starting quarterback at the moment. I don't think that's a great recipe for success. But you know, we'll see. And then as far as like the Bills and Chiefs go, it's about time they played a hard schedule. I know last year, you know, with the whole Eagles thing, they played a cakewalk of a schedule. And for the most part, the Kansas City Chiefs and Buffalo Bills have a pretty moderate schedule every year. But now we really get to see what these two teams are made of. They get a real good test. And you know, I think one of the more teams that surprises me is the Miami Dolphins and who they play. And they'll really get tested. And I guess we'll see what this whole team is made of, especially after, you know, they got Jalen Ramsey in this offseason and they still have Tua as a starting quarterback. So we'll see how he does against these harder opponents.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that all five of these teams are in the AFC. This really shows how strong that AFC is going to be and just how tough their schedules are. I really like the fact that the Bills and Chiefs have more difficult schedules. They need to have difficult schedules. I mean, these past few seasons, they've really had some easy teams to beat. But looking at the Patriots, Nathan, having the most difficult schedule in the league, if they were to, you know, struggle and not make the playoffs once again, and, you know, finish bottom of their conference like many are projecting, do you think Bill Belichick hangs it up and, you know, retires as a coach? And or do you think, you know, Mac Jones is no longer the quarterback in New England?
You know, it's just so hard to say that Bill Belichick would just hang it up after this season. I know given his age, he is older. Tom Brady's not there anymore to help him win Super Bowls. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you got to kind of test. You get a good test of what the Patriots are made of. I don't think he immediately just up and retires. I don't think he immediately gets fired this season. And as far as like quarterback change, it all depends on how Mac Jones plays during the regular season. I think he's perfectly capable of being a really, really good quarterback in the NFL. Obviously, he has limitations, but I think that as of right now, there's no doubt in my mind that he is the starting quarterback for the Patriots, and I don't think he should be replaced anytime soon.
Do you think it makes it easier for Belichick to retire now that Bill O'Brien's up there?
I wouldn't say easier, but I honestly don't think that he thinks Bill O'Brien should take over. I don't think Bill O'Brien should take over. It's really one of those things where he's going to end up being the scapegoat at the end of the day. If Bill O'Brien becomes the head coach of the New England Patriots, that franchise is going to burn down. They might burn, like him, they might burn him at the stake after a season.
Just like the Texans did to him back in the day with Deshaun Watson and all that.
Yeah, just like Alabama should have done to him.
Moving on to the NBA, they announced their All-NBA teams, all defensive teams, and all rookie teams last week. To talk about the All-NBA teams, the first team, you had Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, Nathan's favorite, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Luka Doncic. Giannis was the only unanimous player to make this team, or any team for that matter. Then you have the second team, Jimmy Butler, Jaylen Brown, Nikola Jokic, Donovan Mitchell, and then Steph Curry. And then the third team, Julius Randle, LeBron James, Domantas Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox, and then Damian Lillard. Nathan, do you agree with all these players making these teams? And do you think people like Steph Curry, LeBron James, and Damian Lillard did not play the 65 games that are going to be required next season with the new collective bargaining agreement deserve to make it this season?
No, I don't think they did. You know, to start off with, you know, where everyone is, I think that there's a good argument to be made that Jokic should have been first team and Embiid should have been second team, even though Embiid did win the MVP. I just think that Jokic has been the better player all season. But, you know, that's really debatable. Outside of that, you know, LeBron James making third team, it kind of felt like just a name thing to me. LeBron James, even though he's been very, very impressive given his age this season, I felt like there are better choices to be made to fill that slot. You know, it really comes down to the amount of games they played. And of course, you know, when that season, that's all going to be fixed. So the 65 game minimum, but you know, this is hopefully the last season we'll see these kind of superstar players just kind of sitting around and having these rest days.
I definitely think somebody like De'Aaron Fox, I mean, the third team, should have made it on the second team ahead of Steph Curry. De'Aaron Fox obviously led this Kings team to the playoffs, was awarded the most clutch player of the year. I mean, he really willed this team to the playoffs when people didn't think they were going to even make it this season or win at least 30 games. So I really think he should have made it over Steph Curry, who didn't even play 60 games. And then I think maybe a guy like Jalen Brunson should have made it over Damian Lillard. I don't think Damian Lillard, I mean, he quit at the end of the season when they, you know, the Portland Trailblazers decided they weren't going to make the playoffs. I think Jalen Brunson was probably the best point guard in the East last season, most reliable. Definitely think he should have made it over a guy like Damian Lillard. Then I look at LeBron James. Like you mentioned, Nathan, I think that's kind of just a name thing there. He did play well when he did play, but I don't think he deserved to make the third team. I definitely look at a guy like Lauri Markkanen or maybe Anthony Edwards, for that matter, to make it over him. I think they both played better this season, especially Lauri Markkanen. I mean, he was the most improved player. We saw it with the Jazz. I mean, they almost made the playoffs up until like the last week of the season. They were in it. But I really agree with the first team. I think they got that right for the first time in a while. But I do think once next year comes around and there's no positions in these things like Jokic not making it in the first team and being sent to the second team will be fixed. And you might have a guy like Luka Doncic or maybe Shea, for that matter, not make the first team anymore. But I do think if I was to pick between Shea and Luka, who was going to make it the first team, I say Luka wouldn't have made it because at the end of the season, he didn't play very well. But overall, I think they got these right. And hopefully with the new 65 game minimum, all these issues with the players not playing the correct amount of games are fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the all defensive teams. The first team, you had Alex Caruso, Drew Holiday, Jaren Jackson, Brooke Lopez, and Evan Mobley. The second team, you had Bam Adebayo, OG Anunoby, The Clown, Dylan Brooks, Draymond Green, and Derek White. So Nathan, I think we're both going to agree Dylan Brooks does not deserve to be on this list whatsoever. So speaking on that, and then what are your thoughts on just the list overall between these two teams?
Yeah, obviously Dylan Brooks, I think he had games where he did play good defense, but for the most part, and all defensive team, he should not have been on one. Another guy, I think the Alex Caruso, I didn't think he deserved to make it. Given the games he played, given the stats he put up, I didn't think he really deserved to be on a team at all. It just really surprised me that he even got first team. I think everyone else on the list is, you know, pretty good. I think some honorable mentions, some guys I think should have made it. Definitely Herbert Jones for the Pelicans. I think that Jaden McDaniels for the Timberwolves, he plays incredible defense. He was really good this season. And I think Lou Dort is another guy who could have made it. And that's, you know, beside my favoritism for him.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that we could have gotten some better names on these lists.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. A guy like Alex Caruso, I don't think deserved to be on here. I know he plays great defense, but I think a guy like you mentioned, Nathan, Lou Dort, who against the Clippers, that one game, I remember watching it in the final seconds, didn't even allow Kawhi Leonard to get a shot off. I think that was pretty cool. Very good showing of how good he plays defense. guy like him or Herbert Jones should have made at least a second team, maybe the first team, over a guy like Alex Caruso or maybe a guy like Dylan Brooks. But for me, the two snubs were Nick Claxton, the center for the Brooklyn Nets, and then Walker Kessler of the Utah Jazz. I mean, I think that both those guys deserved it over somebody like Bam Adebayo, maybe Draymond Green, if you're looking at big men. I think those guys definitely played better than both those guys consistently throughout the season. So I really think these teams really messed up. I don't agree with most of the guards. The forwards on the second team were not great either. They really need to, I think, overhaul the defensive teams or something, because it feels like year after year there's some weird players put on these lists in these teams. Moving on to the all-rookie teams, the first team, you had Paolo Banchero, Walker Kessler, Jalen Williams, the guard for the Oklahoma City Thunder, Benedict Mathurin, Keegan Murray on the first team. And then the second team, you had Jalen Duren, Jaden Ivey, Tari Eason, Jabari Buss-Smith Jr., and Jeremy Sochan. So do you agree with those teams?
Yeah, I think that those teams are perfect. I don't think that you could really argue, anyone going anywhere else. I felt like, they got it head on.
Yeah, I think you look at a guy like Jaden Ivey, who made the second team. If he didn't struggle with injuries toward the middle part of the season, I think you probably had a conversation of him making it over somebody in Benedict Mathurin, maybe Keegan Murray. I'm not a huge fan of Jabari Smith Jr. He's so inefficient at times, but this rookie class was fairly weak this season. So I guess Jabari Smith really just got on here because, somebody like Chet Holmgren didn't play this season, who I think was poised to be a breakout star. I mean, we saw Jalen Williams for the Thunder. He was amazing. So before we get out of here, Nathan, with somebody like Jalen Williams making this team and you got Chet Holmgren coming back, what are you expecting from the Thunder team next season?
I guess it all depends on who we get in this year's draft. Of course, I think, with the lottery, wherever we end up picking, we obviously had the opportunity to trade up. It all depends on what Sam Presti does. I think right now we're projected the 12th pick. If a guy in Jairus Walker is still on the board, taking a guy like him who has great defensive aspects to his game, that'd be a huge help. As you can see, because in the playoff game, the play-in game, one of the biggest scenes was we didn't have a true center playing the position, and it really hurt us in the long run. Also, getting Chet back and healthy, it's going to be crazy to see what he's capable of. And just the rest of the team, what Sam Presti has been able to do has just been absolutely crazy, especially after, the departure of the whole super team and every single MVP that has walked through that building.
Yeah, I think it's just come down to this Oklahoma City Thunder team addressing the center position, getting some defensive centers in there, some size, some strength, because like you mentioned, Nathan, we saw in the playing game against the Timberwolves, Rudy Gobert and Kat were just feasting in the paint. I mean, I think at one point there was like Isaiah Joe playing center or something. So, I mean, you definitely got to address that if you're going to contend in the West, which has, you have Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis, guys like that. I mean, you got to have a really defensive center that has length size in there. But that'll wrap us up for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.